Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If there is no contract by the end of June.
I can tell you already, ain't gonna be no contract June 30th. I wouldn't make that bet. Okay. Like, they have no capacity to say yes that quickly. These people don't know how to say yes to us. They only know how to say no. They don't even know how to ask the next question. So June 30th, I don't know. I believe God is still in the miracle making business. So we'll see.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Mr. Popularity Tuesday, and here's why. First of all, it's Tuesday. Welcome, welcome everyone. To your friend, Stacey Davis Gates, awaiting before I allow Stacey Davis Gates to talk. Let me just say one thing that's on my mind, I'm just smiling at. I mentioned this last week, and it's just increased. So there, every time I write or speak anything critical about Mayor Brandon Johnson, the Chicago Bears, and the stadium proposal, it gets written up by, promoted, I should say, by the right wing in Chicago. And suddenly I'm the most popular man among the right wing in Chicago. And I find that a delightful and delicious moment for me. I've been on the left. Right now I always joke, I do my podcast from the attic overlooking the alley. Today I happen to be in the kitchen for a long story, but whatever. The point is, this is not WTTW. This is not NPR. This is not Cranes. This is not the Chicago Tribune or Sun-Times. Right now there's someone drilling up in the attic. That's why I'm down here. My point is this. I've always been on the fringes of the mainstream in Chicago. My whole life in this city, which goes back to 1981, I've been on the fringes. The time I'm started criticizing and really coming hard at him, my beloved Brandon Johnson, coming hard at that Bears thing, suddenly I'm Mr. Popularity with the right wing, which has ignored me for all these years. So I'm like, got two feelings about this. On one hand, I'm vain, just to quote Mike Tyson, I'm vain. And I love it. Oh, promoting. Hey, lefties, why don't you promote it a little bit? Just saying, lefties. It's like, I need the right wing to promote me in this town. So I'm vain. On the other hand, I'm not the dumbest guy in the world, all right? So I know. I absolutely, positively know that all these right-wingers are promoting my story. Oh, read this one from the progressive Ben Jarofsky. If the mayor was named Vallis and he was promoting this Bears deal, they would not be quoting me. They would not be criticizing the deal. They'd be waving the flag. Just like they wave the flag for every dumb idea that Mayor Rahm came up with and Mayor Daley came up with. Now, for some reason, the only consistent person in this one is me. So for some reason, they're turning into leftists when Brandon Johnson promotes or gets aboard this cockamamie Chicago Bear handout. Go to 87th Street, Mr. Mayor, and I'll be waving the flag too. I'm like, why do they wave the flag for Daley and Rahm, but they turn into leftist critics for Mayor Johnson? I asked the same question, why they turned against Lori Lightfoot. I still don't understand that one. Oh, well, she's mean, Ben. Oh, suddenly the titans of corporate Chicago are worried about meanness and nastiness. They're not afraid to be mean and nasty when they got to fire a bunch of workers. And they love mean and nasty when Mayor Rahm was doing mean and nasty and Mayor Daley was doing mean and nasty. I'm just wondering. I struggle with this. What is the difference between Brandon Johnson and Lori Lightfoot and Daley and Rahm? I got to think about that a little more. So right wing Chicago, keep promoting my show. Keep promoting my articles. God bless you. But don't forget all these lessons you supposedly learned if it's Mayor Vallis or the other guy you love, Mayor Conway. Okay? Just stay consistent. What?
Which Who's else? Mayor Conway?
Oh, well, I'm in their dreams, Mayor, their fantasy.
Who's Conway?
Forget it. Don't even go. We don't even... Corporate Chicago knows. I'm speaking corporate Chicago speak.
Oh, okay.
You would have like a dog whistle. They love Conway, the alderman of the 34th Ward, which wasn't even where the 34th Ward is now. Give you a whole
He's going to be the competition for mayor?
Yes.
Interesting.
You heard it here first.
Oh, okay.
So that's my take. And by the way, Stacey, you should know, I get whenever the right quotes me or makes reference, at least five people send me the link. Ben, did you see this? So they know I don't follow Twitter. All right, Stacey Davis Gates, welcome back. Good to see you. Hey, you ready to rock and roll?
Let's go.
All right, so I have four basic things I want to discuss with you today. We'll see if we get to them. I'll start with this contract, since that seems to be on your mind these days. I saw an article in the paper. It was almost like it was in the Bright One, my beloved Chicago Sun-Times, where they were like saying, Stacey Davis Gates reserves the right to go on strike. And it's like they want the good old days to be back. There may be a strike, people. Even though it's a different kind of negotiation, a different kind of contract issue going forward. Comment on this, if you will, Stacey.
This is going to be like the hardest one, I think. I am really wrapping my head around the idea of what transformation means and the habits that we have to establish on our side of the table to create an environment and bargaining where we're thinking about our job as one that transforms CPS. Because like mayoral control of Chicago Public Schools has been since 1995. And under mayoral control, we didn't get more for the vast majority of Black children and brown children and working class children who go to CPS. We didn't. What we got was a system of selectivity. We got a system of privatization. We got a system of cuts, closures, consolidations. So this is the first time where you get a mayor who puts out a transition report that says community and sustainable. And that means something different when you go to the negotiating table. It does for us because we say community and we say sustainable. So you have someone who's willing to meet you where you are. So you can't, this isn't a slogan or just an experiment or a rally. This is also meeting people where they are and creating the space to land community and sustainable. So that's one thing. I think the other dilemma, especially for the other side of the table, is everything that I just explained to you. We've already established common interests, right? Now we have to consent to that common interest. And consenting to that common interest means that CPS changes the way that they operate in light of what the mayor says, and he says community and sustainable. They don't say community and sustainable. They say cuts, consolidations, closures. That's what CPS has been for over a generation, right? For generations, just different iterations of the same thing. That means that that institution has zero muscle to do the thing that we have to do. So that means that this is going to be frustrating and perhaps more difficult than 12 or 16 or 19 was, because you have agreement, but you don't have capacity, you don't have practice. And that's gonna be very, very hard for CPS, and it's gonna be hard for us, because what we needed a generation ago. So our impatience is like at 100. And their ability to deliver on collaboration is below zero.
When you mean, did you say you have agreement, but we don't have capacity? What do you mean by capacity?
Well, you have a bureaucracy that only knows how to marginalize and how to say no to community and sustainability. Remember, you're turning over schools. You remember school turnarounds? They just go in and fire everyone and start all over again. Like that's possible in life for anyone. You know, talk about a privileged perspective there. But anyway, they're used to closing and, you know, letting people fend for themselves. You're used to private models where the responsibility and accountability is hidden and, you know, not visible. We're talking about community where everyone has some skin in the game, so it's visible, meaning it's transparent. It's accessible, meaning it's within the community. That's different from all the stuff that I just described. So capacity means does CPS have the ability to come to the table with capacity to say yes to sustainability and to community? No, they don't. And so that's going to be the frustration of this work. Is that they don't have the capacity. And why would they have the capacity? They've never trained for collaboration. They never trained for sustainability. They've never trained for community. And in order to do things, you have to have habits. And habits come from a practice. And if you're not practicing or training for those things, you don't have it. So it's going to be difficult. The two parties that do have a habit of this, it's the Chicago Teachers Union and ostensibly the fifth floor where the mayor is. The question is, how does CPS create their space in this milieu and figure out how we do it together? That's our dilemma. That's perhaps the biggest challenge we have before us, is how they quickly acculturate themselves to the mayor that they have today and not the mayors that they've had previously.
And excuse me for my ignorance on this, I just don't know the answer to this question. Is Jim Francik negotiating for the Board of Education this time around?
Jim has always been a part of our negotiations, continues to be a part, along with his partner, Sally.
Okay, so Francik is there, which I have a smile sort of on my face there. Francik's been around forever. We've talked about him on the show many times. Karen Lewis, dear Karen Lewis, used to love to tease Jim Francik in negotiations that went endlessly. And I think at one point she it was like Jim Francik jokes were told all the time. But this man negotiates lots of deals for the city of Chicago. I remember when Mayor Johnson revealed that he was going to keep Francik on for police contract negotiations. And the irony of all this is that Francik is a private citizen. I defended him on this one, Stacey. Lori Lightfoot fired him on this one. He came out and endorsed Paul Vallis in the mayoral election.
Hey, man, like, she and I didn't agree on a lot, but like, you ain't supposed to do that. Like, he quit. He didn't get fired. He quit. He handed in his resignation. When he did that, he knew he handed in his resignation. He just wanted to see, he just wanted her to do it so he have a headline. Tell him I said it.
Oh, we'll send it to him.
That's what that was, because he knows better. Like, this man has worked for Daily. This man has worked for Rom. He know the rules. Just everybody else that don't know the rules. Look, the rules only change when a black man is the mayor. The rules only change when black people are in executive positions. That's what you alluded to earlier, but you didn't want to say it, so I'll say it for you. No, because no one is saying that, though, Ben. Like for all of our lefties out here who got sight, who woke, ain't nobody wrote that story. No. And that's real. And that's not me being accusatory. You know, the left thinks that they're above a race analysis. There is no way you are above a gender analysis and in a patriarchy like our country, our society is. And I know damn well that we are never above a race analysis and our hyper racialized society that is rooted in anti-blackness, like literally rooted in anti-blackness. And so for that to be absent of how we are evaluating the year of Brandon Johnson as mayor of the city of Chicago, it's embarrassing, quite frankly, that no like political reporter, but it may not be embarrassing because who are the Black political reporters? Like who within the political reporting milieu in Chicago has a race analysis at all? Mm-hmm. You know, who's out here talking about that, right? No one. And who is in the political newsroom that could even carry it if they wanted to? Mm-hmm. In a way in which made sense. Who's on the editorial boards doing the same thing? That is malpractice.
Well, I think that, okay, now we're on a tangent. I got to write down where we were when we went on this tangent. I'll finish the tangent, but I'll come back to Franchick in a while. That's where the tangent left. I, having lived in this city since 81, this is me speaking, not Stacy. Absolutely, there is a different attitude that people in Chicago, I think I may have said this the last time we were in the show. There's a different attitude that people have toward a person who's white and a person who's Black in City Hall. There's no doubt. And put Brandon Johnson aside for the moment. Just concentrate on the Lori Lightfoot administration. And I said this to you the last time we were in the show. She pretty much gave corporate Chicago everything they wanted. And they turned on her. Why did they turn on her, Stacey? Why did corporate Chicago turn on Lori Lightfoot? Lori Lightfoot fought. Corporate Chicago hates Chicago Teachers Union. And they really don't like you. And they didn't like Karen Lewis.
They're just mad that I don't work on their behalf.
Well, they would love you if you went to work for them. Oh. And all Lori Lightfoot fought the Chicago Teachers Union the whole time. You would think they would champion her. No, they turned on her. They embrace Vallis. And so what?
That says more about them than her.
Yes. I believe it's because of racial prejudice. There, I said it.
Well, they want a white person
in charge.
Popular media, legacy media in Chicago. I mean, the only outlet that even like does it regularly and consistently, but it's a part of their existence, is the Tribe. Like, honestly, that's the one that you do read where you will read it in there. And quite frankly, I think it's unfair that they have to be the only like publication, if you will, that's carrying that. It's an unfair burden because it's malpractice everywhere else. I also think it's malpractice that you haven't seen any political reporting into helping to understand, identify, define the progressive movement in a real way. But I said that like when Obama was president, one of the hopes that I had was that the political commentary, the political writing and reporting and editorializing, that all of those things would be shaped with a better race analysis because we had a Black president. Well, I guess I'm still waiting. You know, because I just think it's malpractice that popular legacy media gets to have their bootstrap, you know, version of Black, you know, to say, you know, look, we can get past the racism. You have your president who's ascended here. Like, that was the narrative that popular media wanted to portray. And quite frankly, it's a narrative that people wanted to believe too. Who wants to like live the existence that we do live, you know? That said, it didn't get better. It actually spawned Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So that is the malpractice. Not only didn't it get better, it got worse, because what it did is that it allowed for this absolutely unhinged, lunatic fringe, right-wing press to like foment and flourish. I don't know if I can use those two together, but you get my point. It allowed the right-wing media to populate like no other. They have all of these like blogs who report the same thing. Like on any given day, you can tell when CTU did something that like tickled the right wing's fancy, because every single right wing outlet will like send emails for comment, and they will literally copy and paste this exact same story. It won't be different. IPI sends out their email, WGN reports on it, Marianne retweets it. Then you see, what is it, the New York Post. Then you see the Daily Mail. It's like they have this whole little circus, and they all get the same talking points and email at 6 a.m. And it's like, go. it's really, and then they send into all their Twitter bots, and then they all, like, what's the one who wore the bikini to talk to the, she lost her job. She was on NBC 5. She was, what's her name? She's like the white right wing princess now or some stuff like that. Her radio show like sent out the most vile and racist tweet about me yesterday. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you can tell the continuum of freak shows, and they're all so coordinated. It's like someone in a room hits a go button and the lights go on. It's really malpractice by our media to allow that. And mark my words, and I'm saying it here today. What's today's day? May 7th. Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. WGN and NBC5 are going to have to be accountable for normalizing the Illinois Policy Institute. They're at some point, the Breitbart of Illinois, right? Damn near the Turning Points of Illinois. They're going to be responsible for legitimizing them as like an a respectable organization that does not traffic in sexual harassment and anti-blackness. They're going to be responsible for that right wing mess, because they report on them like they tell the truth, and WGN as well. It's a slippery slope. See political commentary and news post Obama, and what's tolerated and what isn't, and how it started. I'm a history teacher. We pay attention to stuff like this because at some point we are making sure that we are able to teach it and so forth. This is it's quite the thing, Ben.
Yeah, no, I'll say this to that point. Donald Trump as a force, a media force, in the 80s and 90s and into the early '00s was abetted by national media figures like David Letterman and Howard Stern. They had him on their show regularly, and they promoted him as a mainstream figure and turned him into a celebrity, or enhanced his celebrity. And that was sort of the jumping off point for his campaign. He was a known person, Stacey, okay? Now they go around apologizing for it. I don't know if you've heard that, but Letterman and Stern have apologized for the role. Jimmy Fallon at the Tonight Show, you know, I don't know if he's actually apologized for the contribution he made to the advancement of Donald Trump's career, but he was chastised by it. So I don't know if these mainstream media outlets in Chicago will be as upfront as Howard Stern and David Letterman and Jimmy Fallon and apologize for what they've done. to your point, we'll have to wait and see on that. But the racial end of all this, Stacey, and where it intersects with progressive, the progressive world, is so right there in front of our face, and it's ignored. Do you get what I'm saying? It's ignored by the so-called progressives as well.
And see, that's the story that everyone misses when they're talking to Jeanette, because that's what she's saying. We're the salaciousness of what Alderwoman Taylor is saying is that the same pervasive white supremacy and patriarchy that everyone in this country is socialized under, the same with everyone, even on the left spectrum. And that we have to be clear about working to eradicate it on every level. But people want to concentrate on like the National Enquirer part about it, instead of like the meat of it, the transformative nature of what's being said out loud. Mm. What Alderwoman Taylor is also saying is that it is hard to be respected as a Black female leader with an unapologetic voice. It is hard being translated effectively through our popular mediums, because there's this like great attention to using what furthers your own confirmation bias, instead of using the complicated nature of leadership, being Black and female at the same time. Like, if our media concentrated on the stories that are really before us, there's depth, there's dimension, there's authenticity to it. Like, there's so much to get from the progressive movement right now that isn't what we're getting, until it doesn't even make sense. There's so much to get from how does it look for... So if Harold Washington was Jackie Robinson, then Brandon Johnson is Willie Mays.
I'm thinking through that metaphor, that analogy. Not really,
wait a minute. Hank Aaron, my bad.
Yeah.
Hank Aaron. Yeah. Hank Aaron.
Okay. So, now I get, okay, now I see the analogy.
You're hearing my affinity for basketball over baseball.
You lost me there.
I'm sorry, but Hank Aaron.
All right, so let me translate that to my non-sports fans. So Jackie Robinson, I think even my non-sports fans, Stacey, know that Jackie Robinson was the first Black man in the modern era. It was actually a Black man in the 1800s who played Major League Baseball. And as a result, he was the target of some of the most vicious, just blatant racism, just right out in front, post-World War II. And Hank Aaron came in the aftermath of Jackie Robinson, great, great hitter, and he broke Babe Ruth's home run record. But it was in the course of breaking that record that the racism came out. So the racism wasn't there every step of the way, challenging his right to play baseball, because Jackie Robinson had already crossed that line. The racism came out when his superiority as a baseball player was going to transcend that of the great Babe Ruth. Is that the analogy you're making?
I mean, Brandon Johnson was great as a county commissioner, an organizer, a teacher, but as a mayor, right? Like, we really and truly have to have some, and you don't even have to agree with this, you know, analogy that I'm making here. He doesn't have to be as great as Hank Aaron, right? And you can't front on a race analysis that is sitting right before us based on how this country holds Black people in places or positions that show their ability to compete, to win, to occupy the space, to lead. Because, like, think about it, Ben. The issue that the lefties also had with Lori, I'm not saying that there isn't a racial analysis with the former Mayor Lightfoot, because obviously it's both. I think it's an LGBTQIA plus analysis. I think it's a female analysis and a race analysis, all of that. That being said, though, like, think about what happened. You get somebody coming from 2%. Like, she said it. She said, God bless them. And she made sense at 2%. Like, and now Mayor of Chicago. So that's already huge. So that's not smart and competent leadership to go from, in a very short amount of time, from 2% to the mayor. That's an operation out of this world, commandeered by the person at the top of the ticket who, ooh, by the way, is an organizer, right? So we missed that story completely. No one literally has wrote that story. 2% to this. What were the mechanics of that? What were the decisions? Who played roles in that? how was the mayor involved? But we'll never see that story, maybe in his autobiography or some stuff like that. But they missed that story because no one could fathom that story. Now, if it was David Axelrod and just say Conway, you know what I'm saying? That is, they're on CNN.
No, so, okay, here's how it translates.
I got one more point. Give me this last point. Mm-hmm. When have you ever seen a mayor check off the boxes on progressive initiatives that have been checked off in Chicago? Like, no lie, it's impressive. Sub-minimum wage, paid time off, reopening mental health care clinics, passing your first budget with, you know, a pretty decent majority, giving, investing in the workforce, the female workforce, by providing parental leave for all the Chicago public schools, not just CTU members, but everyone who works for the Chicago public schools, they get parental leave, even the boys. What I'm saying about this is that who does that within the first 9 months of their tenure? 6 months, I think, is what it was. But what's concentrated on in the coverage is the tabloid stuff. How do you pass all of that with the city council that has been reluctant for years on all of those measures to deal with them, right? You literally have roll calls for these issues previous to, how did they put together the roll call, right? Is he twisting arms or do people suddenly believe in this, right? There's a lot of dimension to this story that you're not getting. You get an incompetent Negro man on the fifth floor, lazy. We've done this before. Go to YouTube and type in Walter Jacobson or Mike Flannery and you'll hear it. That's been done before. What hasn't been done is, what is the progressive movement? What is it about? Why are they so free with their criticisms to their friends? You know, Brandon Johnson, mayor of Chicago, black man, what does that feel like? What's on his shoulders? How does this work? I mean, it's just so much more to be curious about than the things that we read every day. Look, I'm not saying you can't be critical. I'm a teacher. We believe in red markers, right? It's a part of our DNA. We're critical about anything and everything. Ask the people who live with us. But I am also saying, as a teacher, you are missing the complete lesson if you are intent on staying on the 100 level of coverage of this administration.
Well, all right. And to that point, and I'm not certain, I don't want to go into conspiracy country here. I actually think it's less a conspiracy than a mindset. Follow me in this, Stacey. So going back to your riff about the coverage of the election, all right, where he went from 2% to winning. So there, if that were, when I think of Jane Burns' victory in 1979, many years ago, a lot of the credit, deservedly so, went to her campaign manager, Don Rose, great lefty, Don Rose. Shout out Don Rose, nothing but love for Don Rose. But that was the focus. It was Don Rose's brilliance, Don Rose the strategist, Don Rose the knowledgeable student and scholar of Chicago politics. Put that organization together, shaped that organization, got her, manipulated, took advantage of the blizzard and people's attitudes toward it, and won her the election. So that's sort of the general consensus that the media had about 79. I have no doubt that if Brandon Johnson's victory, if Brandon Johnson had been supported by David Axelrod, it would have very similar coverage. It would be David Axelrod, brilliant strategist. He sees things that other people don't see. He plays chess. He's playing four-dimensional chess, and everybody's playing two-dimensional chess. He's so smart. You know, he's so brilliant. That would have been the narrative. That would have been what you heard when you turn on channel 11. That would have been what you heard when you turn on a radio. That would have been heard on 99% of the news media. Brilliant, David Axelrod. What was behind Brandon Johnson? The media narrative right now is like this, like communist group, the Chicago Teachers Union, dispatched its robots into Chicago, and that like the old machine. It's a machine.
A comic book.
No one's smart. There's no brilliant strategist. There's no one who's like playing four-dimensional chess while everybody's playing two-dimensional chess. There's no one who looks at the world one way and sees it differently than everybody else. No, it's robots going out, and they're scary and dangerous, and they're going
to
take.
And they're trying to indoctrinate your children.
Yes,
it's vapid. It's so pathetic. I feel sorry for us that there are so many different dimensions to how people who were never involved and, you know, wanting to be a part of change in this city. There are so many stories from that campaign that people missed on purpose. There are so many stories about the different like organizers who found their voice and, you know, became reinvested in Chicago. But, you know, that too is a powerful story that can't be told. Or how about women, a union full of women who said that they could flex political power? It's only good, though, when you're voting for a Democrat and they only want to narrow it to an abortion instead of everything else. It's an abortion and it's a fair wage. And it's a neighborhood school for my kid. And it's, you know, having paid time off from, you know, my 9 to 5 downtown. And it's, you know, making sure I'm still not working for tips only because it's 2024. You know, it's a lot of ands. And I think that's what our movement gives Chicago. It gives them a tapestry of people who need something from government, need a public accommodation. Many times government is leveraged for people who don't need it, but want it. And the want is somehow magically turned into a need.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the imbalance that we're used to in this, you know, milieu here in Chicago. So I don't know. It's frustrating as a teacher. Because it's kind of like, dude, can we get something to like think about? Give me stuff, like bring something to me that makes me say, huh?
Well, going back, so we went on this long tangent, which I could go on further. And I'm literally split between going on the tangent, going back to where we began the tangent. But I gotta say this, I haven't said this yet. Did you see that footage out of Mississippi over the weekend?
Did you see that? Yes, I did.
And
it looks like the mentions on Twitter. Like it looks like my mentions on Twitter. I'm not kidding you. Like seeing that and reading my social media comments, child, these people are out of control.
I believe that should be required for my beloved lefties. I'm going to say this. You're not saying this is me, not Stacy. So the footage in question, it was at a, I think it was University of Mississippi.
Ole Miss.
And there was a pro-Palestinian encampment. So God bless them. It's taking us in Mississippi. And they were surrounded by counter-protesters who were just openly Trumpsters. And they were chanting, Trump, 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 Trump. So I just like my beloved lefties just to think about that for a moment. Okay? And how the pro-Palestinian movement is being used by MAGA to elect Trump. Just think about it for a moment, just the dimensions and the dynamics here. And a black woman came, I don't know, I think she was a protester, you know, standing up for Palestinian rights. I guess she was, Stacey, I don't know. All I know is that she confronted the Trump protesters and they were just so openly racist to her, and it's captured on video. So if you think that race is over, like Stacey was saying, if you think that somehow or other we're moved beyond that, I just urge you to watch that tape, watch the recording, see for yourself. I feel it's the same dynamic on one level or another that Brandon Johnson is dealing with. Like he's given the downtown community what they want on his Bear Stadium, and they still won't endorse him.
And here's the thing about that Bear Stadium. That's the stuff that I feel like is most noticeable with legacy media. So now they're going to carry the left flank in the Chicago Tribune. Like, this isn't serious. You know what I'm saying? It's not serious. Like, I don't need the Chicago Tribune to say what I'm going to say. Like, when did the Chicago Tribune carry the left flank on any public investment for a private entity? I'll wait. When a Black man makes a presentation of it. Now, that has nothing to do with what my values are on it. It's just pointing out an obvious inconsistency in the way in which they have typically reviewed, evaluated such deals.
And by the way, I'll repeat what I said. If Paul Vallis won the election, they'd be waving the flag. Now, maybe not the Tribune, because I'll give them credit for this thing. Hey, I'm fair, Stacey. Mm-hmm. They have resisted lakefront development in other instances. So Tribune, one of the only things that you and I ever agreed on and anything you ever wrote an editorial about was that. But all the other ones... Well, wait, I'm checking that. They were waving the flag for the Olympics, which was going to clutter up the lakefront and the parks with all kinds of nonsense. So I take it back just what I said. I try to give them credit. I couldn't do it. But yeah, they'd be waving the flag if it was a different mayor for this Bears Stadium deal. So it's so obvious. It's so there. People can close their eyes, Stacey, if they want to. It doesn't do us any good if you do it that way. All right, let me... Do you want to say anything else about what went down in Mississippi?
No, I mean, that's status quo. That's Elon Musk's X platform. Every day, that's social media. Like, that's just the reality. Other people happen to see it. That was what the beauty... See, again, strategy. That's what you saw there is what, you know, strategists... You know, in the civil rights movement, helped to create. They already understood the daily indignity of experiencing anti-Blackness. The genius was, how do we provoke it so everyone else can see it? And the cruelty that we experience all the time. That's where you get politics of respectability from, is that they understood that the level of anti-Blackness that Jim Crow allowed would only be the greatest spectacle if they got dressed up and sat there with a stone face and absorbed that indignity, right? But no one calls that strategic or genius. They think that that's how Black people really acted. You understand what I'm saying? They believe that Black people are okay with that level of indignity. They've never, the popular narrative or narrators of American life, they've never created space and energy for how genius it was of those organizers to create that spectacle to instigate the widespread shame that then drove policies and transformation of culture. But no one talks about it like that popularly. Like, that narration would say Black people got brains. And if you say that, then oh my God, then that means that they don't have tails. You're gonna get me in trouble today. Let's go, yeah. What's next?
All right, well, just close up the negotiation thing. It was frantic. I'm smiling when I say that. I don't know the man. I'm trying to think if I've ever even met him. So I'm just doing this based on,
Karen had a great affinity for him because, he's Karen likes smart people.
Yes, he is. Like, yep.
She appreciates people, that study and work on their craft. And I think that that's what she recognized in him, because he is formidable. He is formidable. And now, and his leadership and his brilliance at the negotiating table is now being directed to create sustainable and community.
Yeah.
So now he has to use all of that brilliance for good.
You know what? So, okay. How do I say this? When we at our the reader were first negotiating our contract, we had one group of owners, okay, and they were intransigent and they didn't want to recognize the union, and their negotiator, he would just stonewall us, okay. And I know our negotiations are very small compared to what you guys go through, but that's what we were dealing with. Then we got a new set of owners who were labor oriented, to put it mildly, and they instructed the negotiator to settle this up, take care of these guys. Stacy, this dude was like, it was night and day. He was wearing a Hawaiian shirt at the first negotiations. It was like party time. And the tactics changed. In the old days, he'd be quoting Taft-Hartley. Well, you don't understand with the Taft-Hartley. I'm like, oh, God, here comes a lecture on Taft-Hartley. Anything to run out the clock. Do you follow me, Stacy? No more Taft-Hartley lectures. So my guess is with Francik, it's like, all right, you had one mayor, Rahm, a lunatic, wants to prove to the world how tough he is on unions because he thinks that's going to advance his career. So he pushes that agenda. Now you got a new leader, Brandon Johnson. Got a new vision. I guess I'm not at the table. He'll do the metaphorical equivalent of putting on a Hawaiian shirt. Do you follow what I just told you?
I'm following it.
Now, is he wearing a Hawaiian shirt?
Well, no, but CPS is.
CPIC.
That's what I'm saying about habits. You understand what I'm saying about habits? They don't have habits that include collaboration, community, and sustainability yet. And that's the biggest roadblock to this being something that won't be frustrating. That's my early prognostication based on how difficult it, let me give you one of the clearest examples that I have. There was a grant that was available. It's free money, $50 million for green school buses. Okay. We come across it within our community, our green community schools thing that we do here. And I'm sorry if my members hear this, they're going to be mad that I messed up the name, but a committee of members who are working to sustain our earth. Anyway, they come across it. Hey, we should do it. Okay. Hey, we should do it. Hey, CPS, you want to do this? This seems like something that we could collaborate on. It's sustainability. That's what the mayor says. Like, how come, let's do this. So we had to make them do it. Like, we heard no three times before we heard maybe. And then after maybe, it was yes. But how do you turn down $50 million that you eventually won? So that's the type of behavior I'm talking about. They don't know how to do yes, or how might we, or let us see, or explain this to us. They don't know how to do that yet.
Well, it'll take. When does the contract expire? Again, my ignorance. I should know this. But when?
The end of June.
End of June. Wow. So the countdown. You be sure that there will be a countdown going if there is no contract by the end of June, and then counting down.
Well, I can tell you already. Angovino contract June 30th. I wouldn't make that bet. Okay. Like, they have no capacity to say yes that quickly. These people don't know how to say yes to us. They only know how to say no. they don't even know how to ask the next question. So June 30th, I don't know. I believe God is still in the miracle making business. So we'll see.
All right. We'll see. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. All right. Bear Stadium. You know, I've been pounding the drum against it.
Wouldn't you? Those are your values. That's what you do. That's what I'm saying about this moment. Why wouldn't you do that? That is what you do. It's not any small wonder that you would have a column that says, "Oh my God."
Yeah, I guess, why would people expect anything other? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I didn't. Just like people shouldn't expect the CTU to say anything, especially when we're negotiating a contract.
Yeah.
Like, it's, look, what we have said this contract is like, hey, y'all, all in Chicago, we want to participate and how we make meaning of this new Chicago that we're building. We know you exist here because we've been fighting with you for the last decade. How about we do something different, like talk to each other? So, you know, we dropped off something to Reinsdorf. We dropped off something to BOMA. We dropped off something to Governor Pritzker and all of these like folks, like, yo, let's talk about it. So we are going to talk about it. Talking to people doesn't mean my values like evaporate or that the positions that we once had evaporate. It means that they actually have to be in a space of where we are evaluating effectively together the priorities of this city and how they are going to be a part of that prioritization, because our priorities have impact. Don't talk to me about young people downtown during the summertime if they don't have a job at one of your organizations. Don't talk to me about how scared people are of the South Side if there ain't no damn development on the South Side. You have to put inputs into a thing, into a society to get the outputs that you want. And every entity in the city has a role, a responsibility, and are accountable for the outcomes of this city. We're just very loud about ours and saying that people who have prescribed outcomes from us before were wrong. We actually have some answers about what we think we need based on what we do every day.
So I'm trying to read between the lines of what you're saying. Are you saying
that? You ain't got to read in between the lines. Everyone has to put in on Chicago. My members put in on Chicago every day in every community in this city because they work in the schools. And we live in every neighborhood in this city as well. We got so much skin in the game until it is ridiculous the way in which we have been demonized and left out of the solutions. That's what I'm saying. And I'm also saying that it is our job as a movement to put forth our demands and push them forward in the way that we have been doing them and making everyone else accountable to figuring out how our needs are met along with theirs. And then even with that, because I'm a mother with a budget in the household, there are priorities.
Yeah. Well, I would say the schools come. I have an Arlington Heights view. The schools come before the Bears. That's my view. Okay.
You think I'm going to tell you no?
I would hope you would.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why would I say no to that proposition? Yeah. If you said that the Bears come before schools and the Bears were on this, why would they say no? They want to come first. Like, I recognize what this is and what it isn't. I also recognize that our movement, has to put forth an opportunity for people to engage with us. That's why we're doing these open bargaining sessions that CPS has not yet agreed to. But we want to do open bargaining so people, there ain't no boogie people in this, right? These are literally your children's teachers who are negotiating this contract. And so you tell your first grade teacher no. You tell your high school kids teacher no. You didn't got to make me a boogie person. You can talk to the person that put forth the proposal, refined the proposal, and is at the table negotiating the proposal. People, I think that there is mythology behind how we get stuff done here. I'm here to tell you that it is all true. We take 1,012,000 votes. Our rank and file are a part of it. And that's why it takes us so long, because democracy does take time. That being said, we want the public to see our work in action. Show your work. Like every math grade teacher told you from K through eight, and then again in, you know, algebra through calculus, if you made it, show your work. How did you come to this conclusion? Yeah. See, people are pissed off about our conclusions. So like the right wing media right now is talking about $50 billion, but they keep forgetting the 3 cents. Now, people won't know that that was a joke. I made a joke, but right wing media took my joke and made it the tag. And then folks around me were like, oh, my gosh, Stacey, people are really going to believe it. Well, let me say, so the next time I'm going to say we need $100 billion and 5 cents.
I'll take the money. All right. So, Bears, you heard her. Show us your work. Show us your math. Prove to us that stadium will work at that site.
Or go to us too. And us too, Ben. We want to show Chicago our work too. We want to show Chicago that Chicago Public Schools needs a fall, a winter, and a spring sport at every single school in the city. We want to show our work and say that 80% of our schools do not have libraries or librarians, and then people are mad about literacy rates. Like, which one is it? Because you can't have both. And then here's my favorite one. Yeah. Last one, but my favorite. Man, we ought to pay teachers more. They really do a job. Well, okay, here's your chance.
Here's your chance. Yeah, amen to the librarians. And also, if you're like I said the last time you're in the show, and you said that, also let's bring back intramurals. Not every kid is good enough to make varsity, and you get intramurals, pay someone to run the intramurals. It's amazing what you can do with if you commit yourself to the Chicago Public Schools. All right, Stacey, we have run out of time, so no basketball segment this time. We'll save that for next time. I just want to let you know I am obsessively following the NBA, even though my beloved Bulls are not in the mix. It's some great basketball. I know you're really busy, but if you get a chance, watch in particular the Minnesota Timberwolves. Man, Anthony Edwards is the real deal.
Yeah, but y'all got to slow down on these comparisons. Let this man get through a whole playoff season before you crown him the great one. People so thirsty for the next great one. Like, let the man have his magic right now, and let's see where it takes us.
Yes, that's a valid point. And if you are going to compare him to the great ones, do not compare him to Michael Jeffrey Jordan. You know, why don't you start with D-Wade? Okay, compare.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of reminds me of a young D Wade.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he does. His just reminds me of it. But don't start at the top. You get what I'm saying? It's just not fair to anybody. That's my humble opinion.
Well, everyone's thirsty for the next great one, and it's like, man, you missing out on the greatness of now. Just like let it. We did. Yeah, we knew Michael was pretty special, so that's not actually true.
No,
and it's never a question. You just know it. Yeah.
I was telling producer Chris this before you came on, because he's too young. He wasn't even, I don't think he was born yet when Michael Jordan was drafted by the Bulls. Every Bulls fan knew, with like within a month, how great this guy was.
Yeah, it was different.
Yeah, it was different. Anthony Edwards, this is his third year. It's just everyone knew already with Jordan. Like, he was doing things, and with a team, Stacey, that was nowhere near as talented as Minnesota. The early Bulls were, God help us all.
Because you know what it was, Ben, and I know we don't have time for it, but I'm going to just get it in real quick. It wasn't his athletic ability. That's what people focus in on, because the comparisons that they're making, I can see it athletically. Jordan's greatness was in his habits, his the way in which he played the game, the way in which he got himself up for the game, the way in which he attended to his practice needs, the way his intensity, his mindset, his strategy, his love of like bettering his craft. It wasn't the athletic ability. Like, his athletic ability can be matched. That's what people are responding to when they make the comparison with Edwards, because you can see the athleticism. It is the other part, right? The maniacal part of his greatness, yes, that sets him apart.
And his fearlessness, which is,
yes,
that's mind boggling with Jordan. Unafraid. I watched so many games, and that pause where the shooter has the ball and has the look and he doesn't shoot. That pause, and
that's confidence.
Yes,
it's habits, though. Those are habits. Your confidence comes from knowing you can do it because you've done it.
Yes, and there was no pause in Jordan. All right, we are going to close this one out. Stacy, thank you very much, and I guess we'll talk to you next month. She comes on the show once a month and gives everybody something to talk about. So thank you very much, Stacy. Just get the link right, right-wingers, when you drop this one, all right? That's all I ask. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And as Stacy would agree, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash.
No, take it from the boss.
Take it from the boss. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows available at your leisure at chicagoreader.com. Follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.